Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 11. Francesca Scalisi of Cinematrimony. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Hi, Francesca.
Hello, Ben.
So, recently, you and your entire family gathered together to watch the Australian horror movie The Babadook.
That's right. I put Naomi on one knee and Ennio on the other one. I said, children, let's watch.
Yeah, let us learn. Overall, did you like the movie?
I did. I feel like this is, we should clear up two things from the get-go. One, when we say I watched the movie, I focused intently on my crochet for about an hour and a half and looked up maybe like four times and did a lot of saying, like, what's happening right now, Matt? So that is how I watch horror movies, if I can be convinced to watch them, because I'm a okay. little girl in a dress about it. And
yeah.
two, there will be spoilers. We should also address that.
Yes, thank you. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, massive spoilers for this movie.
And don't
yeah.
let us spoil it for you. Go watch it.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get that out there. Everybody should watch this movie. We're not riff tracking here. We both really like the movie, and everybody should definitely watch it. It was my number four or five or something of last year. It was a big deal.
So
thank you for bringing up the spoiler thing. The mm-hmm. So that's not the way you watch movies. That's just the way that you need to keep one foot in reality while you watch a horror movie to make
Definitely.
Sure that it doesn't eat you up.
I will never, ever, ever go to see a horror movie in a movie theater. I
mm-hmm.
just can't. I'm sorry about the ambient bird noise. Are you hearing that?
We're on telephones, and it's going to sound like garbage.
Oh, okay, good, good. Well,
that's
there
part
are
of, that's part
there
of the
something
show.
Going down in the trees right now.
Uh-huh.
Something is up. Anyways,
yeah.
Yes, I usually watch movies. No, I do not usually watch horror movies. I am scared, stupid by them, and will be scared for days and days. And as a gift from the miracle of birth, I usually have to wake up in the middle of the night a few times, either to go to the bathroom or because one of the miracle births are at my bedside waking me up. So, like, I have to really guard my psyche because I am up in the middle of the night almost every night, and I very quickly will get very scared. However, I made an exception for this Australian horror movie. After that bastion of good taste, NPR had made mention of it many times on various podcasts, and they had that magic word, psychological thriller, which I do enjoy a good psychological, parse it apart kind of story.
Yeah.
It was out there enough that it was a good movie, not just a good scary movie, that when Matt said, let's do it, I said, okay, like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is, I'm not a huge horror buff, but I'm a horror snob, which makes no sense. Like, I feel like I have no qualifications to be a horror snob, but I am, like, I'll make time for something if I hear that it's a great movie that happens to be a horror movie. And then when I watch that, I usually almost always love it. And this definitely falls in that. It falls into the existential horror movie category for me, where so much of the tension comes from the natural anxieties and fears and pressures that are going on in the lead character in that person's life. So that's something that I relate to, and I love movies that do it. And this is the best example of that I've seen in a long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, certainly the first, you know, probably before the last third, when it, you know, kind of becomes a more traditional horror movie, which I say haltingly because I don't want to cheapen it by that, but I just mean that what's been built up then becomes, like, it's really the third act that is your falls to the wall horror.
Yes.
Before that, it's all kind of psychological growing tension and, you know, that sort of thing. But certainly kind of from the get-go, it really reminded me of the movie Repulsion. Did you ever see that It was Roman Polanski's first movie. And it's sort of very much in that just uneasy, puts you in that uneasy space where you're with your lead character, and as you go, you kind of question their sanity, which sort of kind of puts you off your footing if you've, like, you know, been, like, right there with them, and you start to go, well, wait a second, you know, that's so uneasy because you've, I guess you get accustomed to you seeing a movie from the point of view of somebody you trust and like and, you know, feel comfortable with. And when that's, you know, when you're lulled into that sense of like, oh, I'm on her side, and then you start to go like, what about it? It's very, very disconcerting as a viewer, I feel like. And
yeah,
interesting.
I mean,
like, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be what makes a great horror movie. A great horror movie is that it makes us ask questions of ourselves and not just of the monster, you know, outside the door. So when I watched The Babadook, it was just a few weeks after our daughter was born. So I was very sleep deprived, and I was getting to know this new creature that lived in our house and created great pressures in my life, and more so in the life of my wife. And I was like, wow, this is the perfect movie for this time of being up at odd hours and having a life that I need to take care of and I need to love. And everybody's telling me that this is a beautiful part of, you know, this is a beautiful experience that I'm having, and not feeling that beauty really at all. Just seeing, hey, this is the basics of life that have to be met, and it's not fun at all. You know, I don't know if everybody is like this, but for the first kid, the hype for the baby was so effusive and positive. And it was such a natural, beautiful miracle of God that it never occurred to me how miserable it actually is. And so I just totally understood this. I totally empathize with this movie that isn't about a father at all, but it is about a parent. And it addresses something that I feel like movies and culture at large don't really address, which is, hey, you know what? Being a parent is hard work. Not only is it hard work, but sometimes you just don't like the kid. And that doesn't make you inhuman. That doesn't make you a monster.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go. Yeah. That's basically the point I wanted to get to and I wanted to get your perspective on.
I think there is, I think it was very, very good that this movie was made by a woman. I think there is a certain amount of understanding, a certain amount of, like, being able to, like, cross a taboo subject without feeling like it was cashing in or somehow exploiting it. Like, she kind of really, certainly, again, you know, the monster part of the movie doesn't happen for a while. You kind of start with the monster is the kid. And,
yeah.
You know, I know that, you know, your baby, if it's not divulging too much, was a crier, as babies are known to do, but
yes.
Some more than others.
Yes.
And, you know, we have a daughter who has some stuff that makes her a little more emotional than your average kid. And so we are certainly well-versed in, like, really big come-aparts at inappropriate times. And, like, this is part of parenthood. And anybody who has their first child and go, they're perfect, I like to laugh behind my hand and be like, good, you have that second one and see what happens. Because no two kids come out the same. And I kind of appreciate that our oldest was a tough one, because when we had our second child, we're like, oh, okay, so sometimes it can be easy. Not devaluing either of them. It's just like, you don't get two easy kids, okay? But usually in some aspects. But then my son just, like, throws food everywhere. Like, he's a destroyer in that way. So you get it any way you slice it. But regardless, you definitely have moments where you do not like your kids. And I have even, and this is going to sound awful, but it's true, had moments where, again, at no point have I ever even been close to wanting to hurt a child, but I have had moments where I've had the dark thought of, like, I can certainly understand how some people, if you're already mentally unstable, could harm a child. I couldn't do it. My brain isn't there, but, like, if you're already on the edge, I could see where this would push you over it. For sure. For sure. Because I'm a pretty, like, you know, person of sound mind. And there are moments where you have to put a door between you and your child for your sanity. Like, I need you to be in there and not talk to me for a while. Please. Just go be there. I'm going to be here. We need some time apart. And so, I mean, and again, I've got a pretty good head on my shoulders, but it will drive you to that. And so you come at it as a parent, having felt some of those feelings, like, why can't you just be good? Why do you have to make it so difficult? And, of course, they also played on the lack of sleep, which definitely makes you feel crazy. Like, for sure, if you're a new parent, you're not getting, you know, more than 2 hours of sleep, you know, at one time at night. You feel crazy. You feel like a crazy person. And then you've got the extenuating circumstances of their backstory, which you come to find out sort of throughout. I think at first you just know that her husband died, and eventually you come to find out on the way to the hospital when she was going to have her son. So that kind of raises the stakes on that whole thing. I don't know what I was talking about to begin with. I'm just talking.
Well, I mean, where the tension comes from in the movie and how relatable it is. I mean, yeah, her situation is especially difficult because, you know, her son probably has some sort of developmental issues, and, you know, she gained him right when she lost her husband. I think that all that tension, it adds up to this movie that, in the end, it's about talking. It's about, like, talking to your neighbor, and it's about talking to your kid, and it's about not carrying all this on your shoulders. And that's one thing that, again, I really like, that it wasn't, it completely goes against the super parent kind of thing where, you know, you're looking good, and your kid, if you feed your kid organic Doritos, then they're going to sleep great, and you could just got to go to the gym. That kind of that cultural whitewash that we get, it addresses that with saying, no, you might be losing your mind. Everything might feel like it's melting down, but the last thing you do is pretend like everything's okay. And rather to lean on the people around you. That was another thing about it that that really got to me.
Well, it certainly, I think, speaks to, I mean, again, you're a dad, but you maybe get a little bit of this as a mom in this stupid Facebook world. I can tell you that there are people who straight up I just had to block. Were they doing anything offensive? Were they being political? No, they were presenting their life as perfect. And I was like, I can't keep watching this. I can't see this because it makes me feel bad. And I try as best I can on the old show me to present my life as it is and to, you know, because I certainly enjoy my children, but, like, we don't have themed movie nights with, like, snacks that go with the movie. That is not, like, a part of my life. My kids, you know, my daughter dressed as a hot dog for Halloween one year because that's what she wanted to do, and my kids always look crazy because it is important to me that they choose their own clothes and do this and that, but, like, you know, I don't need to have your perfect life shoved in my face. And I've sort of gotten to where now I protect myself from that. I know a lot of moms read, like, mom blogs, and it's all about, like, the, you know, perfectly themed birthday party and this and that, and that's wonderful if you like it. I don't. It makes me crazy, and I, like, don't want to expose myself to that because there is this, life is being told in pictures, and you can take, in this, you know, digital world, you can take 25 pictures to find your perfect picture that you're going to, you know, say, this is my life, this is my family, this is how we do things. And I just finally got to where I'm like, I don't need to see that at all. Thank you. Goodbye. I don't need to see that. But I feel like, you know, our parents had the luxury of, like, you saw the people you saw in the grocery store. End of list. Like, that was, those were the moms you saw. And probably they were feeding grapes out of the bag to their kids and, like, to try to keep them, you know, shut up. So, at any rate, it's, parenthood is hard. And, you know, you do get a little bit of that mean mommy thing in this movie, you know, where they're being kind of ugly to her and she snaps at them. But this brings me, okay, so when we finished watching the movie, I said to Matt, like, that's great. That was grief. The point is, I don't think in any way it was, I think it was supposed to be an actual monster in the world of the movie, but I think it's supposed to be a stand-in for grief. which the reason I feel like that's, you know, handed to you on a silver platter.
Right.
But, you know, the fact that it never is vanquished, it's still there, but it's under control. So, okay, this monster is your stand-in for grief. And as long as we address it, as long as we, you know, even feed it a little bit, you can live with it, but it's never going to go away. So that's what I took from it when I watched it. Like, that's what I said to Matt. Like, hey, Matt, this is what this is about. He was like, oh, really? Because I'm super smart like that.
Yeah.
I'm always working it out. And so I liked that very much. I liked that explanation, and I liked that, you know, level of depth to it, that it was, you know, again, it took it one step further than your average monster movie in that you didn't kill the monster. And that makes the allegory work, you know.
Yeah, I think in horror movies, allegory can be a little bit, you know, more apparent than in a neorealist drama or something. I agree. I mean that was one of the big things about the film that really got to me was that last shot of her being able to hold her son and being relieved, not because the problems are gone, but because they're managed and because they have a way to manage them. And I think that was one of the things. After the movie, I immediately
Oh, are we about to get
wife.
Into it? Oh, okay,
huh?
Never mind. I was going to tell you what I did after the movie, and it was going to get deep. But go ahead. What did you say to your wife?
Okay. Well, I just told her that she needs to watch the movie. And she looked at me, and again, I mean, it was right after we had the baby, and no matter how hard my life was at the time, you know, as the mother, her life was 25 times harder. So she looked at me with this look that said, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm still like campaigning for us to watch the movie together. But yeah, just for better or worse, that lesson of learning how to manage. And, you know, I'll take it deep before, or at least personal, in that I struggle with depression, anxiety, and it's something that I didn't realize I struggled with until I really addressed it. And it was one of those things where, just like in the film, it's all that the monster wants is for her to basically ignore it. And the more she ignores it, the more it comes and it becomes a presence. And it's not until she addresses it and challenges it and figures out a way with other people to manage it and educate her son on it that it doesn't stop being a problem, but it becomes a problem that she can deal with. So I think for me that it was such a beautiful picture of dealing with stuff like that and not wanting it, not wishing something away, but also not just ignoring it, but just facing it head on and learning how to, you know, manage, compartmentalize, and share it with other people.
Yeah, well, and I like that. I think the detail that, you know, she doesn't just shut it up in the basement, you know. She has to go down and face it, and it's still scary, and it's still upsetting, but, like, it's not like we just lock it in the basement. And there was sort of an indication at the beginning, too, that, like, she was kind of, again, I didn't actually watch a lot of the movie, but I think that she was kind of scared of the basement or didn't want her, she was, like, the dog was barking at the basement, and she was like, uh-uh. Like, so, like, maybe she already knew it was there. All right,
yeah,
so
I think it just plays with that denial aspect that she probably had a feeling that something, the potential for something is there, and she just was not going to address it.
All right, well, let's go plot talk, because the one thing that I left the movie with, I said, okay, this is grief. This is great. This is really well done. But I said to Matt, I said, I think she must have been supposed to have written the book, because why else would they have made mention of the fact that she was a children's author? Like, that plot point seems, I was like, but that didn't really, I can't figure out what else would have pointed to that. But, like, that's got to be, why would they have that character aspect of her if that wasn't what the point was? So I did the thing that I do when a movie sticks with me. The next day, I, like, just went to our friend Google and was like, was she supposed to have written the book in the Babadook, like, ? And that led me down the deep, dark path of Reddit, where I found out lots of things, some of which I'm going to take with a grain of salt. One person pointed out the Jungian idea of the mind as a three-story house. You've got your, which is, you know, the psycho model as well.
Right.
Your super ego is on the top floor, your ego and your id, you know, bop-de-bop. So, like, the significance of that. One of them, and I think I reject this theory, but I could see where there's some, you could find some footing in it, was that she was abusing her child and had been, and this was something that he was, like, accustomed to, this, like, cycle of abuse. Why he had all his monster gear, like, he knew that it was coming. Kind of some of his talk at the end was suggesting, you know, that, like, you don't love me, mommy, but I still love you. That was sort of, like, victim talk. People went into it that way, even to say, like, you know, the strangled sound in the phone call of somebody saying, bah, 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 could be a kid saying, like, mama, don't. I mean, people went, like, into it. They went into it, and they were like, you know, the happy ending is actually she murdered him, and, like, that's just a dream sequence, whatever. I like to take it on more basic value. No, it was what it was. But they did also kind of go into it a little bit more, just that it wasn't necessarily grief. It could have just been depression. It could have been any kind of, you know, mental disorder that she had been, you know, hiding under the surface or whatever. But I will say, to my original question of, like, was she supposed to have written the book, thank you, Reddit, they pointed out that in the police station scene, she has charcoal all over her hand, as though she's been drawing.
Yep.
And also that there was a shot when she was in the kitchen or something, that the shot started on, like, art supplies on the table.
Right.
To perhaps indicate that she had done. But then I start thinking, I'm like, so wait, why would she have done it? Unless it really was meant to be, like, clues for her son to explain to him, like, why she was, I don't really understand why she would have written it, other than to help herself unlock it, you know? I don't know. Explain yourself, Ben. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't care. Like,
I have to know. I'm like, why would she have done that?
Yeah, so, no, it's...
Unless it was maybe to wake herself up, because she was terrified by it, too.
Yeah, I think, for me, the way, I guess if I had to absolutely put down my thoughts on exactly how I think it internally worked in the movie, is that, yes, she's a child author, because this is something that's being generated from her imagination, she is an imaginative person, so she's an author, and has that stuff around just in general. So she could have been doing anything. I don't think she was actually generating the book herself. I like to think that, no, the book is actually this monster book that comes, and there was an actual monster. And it's, I don't know, I like to read it at face value, and that it's tied to her creativity, but not, I don't think she was, like, schizophrenic and off screen when we didn't see her, was doing all this work that paid off when the camera started rolling, you know, when the story started kicking back in. That, I don't really like that very much. I don't like suggesting that she has a whole alternate personality that we never see. I much rather prefer that without her knowing it, you know, her anxieties are being projected into this monster that, If anybody else walked, because the dog did, you know, I mean, if anybody else walked in the house, well, I guess she killed the dog. But if anybody else walked in the house, I like to think that, oh, my God, they would have seen a big scary dude with a hat. For the purposes of the movie. I don't know. I'm pretty stubborn when it comes to that kind of stuff. For a horror film.
I think it could still work, though, that it was a real monster, but it was somehow made manifest by her or...
Right. Or
you know,
she was feeding it somehow with her imagination, you know, not knowing. That's kind of how I took it. Again, for me, a horror movie, it's fine to function as metaphor, and that's it. Like, I don't need a tremendous amount of backstory or character. I don't need a tremendous amount of logic.
But you get that in this. So I guess that's why I'm kind of like, wait, I want that loose end tied up, because I feel like the rest of it was very tidy and very, you know... You didn't have to forgive a lot. Like, I feel like a lot of it made sense within the world of the story, and so I'm kind of like,
I don't know.
Why can't I wrap my brain around that part?
for me, the way the shots were composed, the way it was edited, it was so precise, it was so clean, it was so selective, that it all just seemed like a metaphorical exercise. It didn't seem like there was much of a world outside the edges of what we saw.
The only other qualm I have with it, though, is why was there the random guy from her work? I don't understand the point of him. I don't understand that. Like, what his point was in the story, other than that.
I think he
got threatened by the fact that a male was showing interest, and that kind of set her off, or I don't understand that.
I think it was a chance to move on. It was a chance to start a new life, but she was so closed off and unwilling to address this stuff that anybody, it was just kind of like the neighbor that kept offering help. She shut him down. That's kind of how I saw it, just as a plot function.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of what else was going on there, I'm not sure.
Sorry that I'm peppering you like you have all the answers.
No,
Don't be a filmmaker, Ben, and expect me not to look to you for answers, okay?
Well, I can't answer like the basic questions of anything on set. So, but the I don't know. I think again, for if this was something melodramatic, if this was Rome, Open City, or a Cassavetes movie, or something like that. I feel like, it'd be pretty sloppy for you to, or like Revolutionary Road, I think is a really good example that film functions greatly in terms of metaphor and broad strokes, and the characters don't feel lived in. However, it deals with specifics, and it deals with human emotions, and it deals with intricate backstories, so it doesn't make any sense that movie paints in broad brushes. Whereas this is getting to something primal, and it's getting to something basic, and it's getting to something, it's a picture of things rather than trying to depict things themselves. So it makes a lot more sense to me to just, hey man, if it works as a experience and it makes me address these things in myself, it did its job. And I think that's the job of any great horror movie.
Go ahead. I'm so bad about talking over you.
I'm so bad about not finishing sentences. I was actually done.
Well, I will say one of the things that I think makes it, besides the imagery being scary, I think it's kind of got that psycho thing of you're not safe in your own home and the greatest threat to you is your parent. Like, that is some primal stuff right there. And also as a parent, you know, it starts that she's kind of scared of her son, too, you know? Like, that, and... P.S. I mean, your baby's still a baby, but, like, kids can be creepy as shit. That is a fact. They will say stuff to you that you're like, oh, my gosh, why? Or, like, just, like, look over your shoulder with a scared look, and you're like, oh, my God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me? But, like, you know, that thing of the monster's inside the house, and the monster's your mom? Are you kidding me? Like, and it's not silly. It's deadly serious. Like, that is so scary. And, like, again, like in Psycho, that, you know, his dad is the one ultimately who's, like, pursuing him and the one you're scared of. Like, oh, my gosh. That is so scary. I mean, if you've ever been a kid, that's terrifying.
Well, you mean The Shining?
Terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, that whole idea of
parents
as enemy, deadly threat, terrifying. It really gets at you.
So you're greatly anticipating The Visit.
I don't know what that is, and I don't even want you to say anything about it. Thank you. Goodbye.
It's the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. Ask your husband about it. He has a opinion.
That's okay. I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, but I agree. There's a certain and it's. I really like the way that the son is used in the movie, because at first he is kind of an antagonist. There's that like really staggering shot to me where he crawls in bed with her and, like, it's like a close-up on his teeth chattering and his arm tightens around her neck. And it's this, like, thing where, sometimes the people you love the most do things that are, like, nails on the chalkboard, and it just seems like complete torture.
I have kids who grind their teeth, and I am like, oh.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
I walk by the room and they're grinding their teeth. I have to, like, crawl up in the fetal position and cry a little bit because I cannot.
Yeah, I don't
can't bear that
do.
Sound.
Yeah, I'd probably just straight to the orphanage. I'm so just nitpicky about stuff like that. But yeah, it's as your kids, I guess, turn into people with their own personalities and their own quirks. I'm curious to see how I'm going to deal with that. But but at the beginning of the movie, he's this antagonistic force. But at the end, he's the one that pulls her back. He's the hero of the movie.
Such a hero. Honestly, the thing, it was just such a good movie. That, yeah. Again, the easy way out would have been like, oh, his mom's a monster, he's gonna kill her. Well, no. He's gonna like force her out of this. I mean, like, what? That is cool.
Yeah.
That is cool because at that point she's such a threat. Like, it would, in a lesser movie, he would just kill her. Like, that's what would
exactly.
happen.
Yep.
And instead, you know, making the allegory work, and no, I'm not gonna, you know, metaphorically kill this person with depression who, having been someone who's also had some depression and who's been around someone with depression, like, when someone's depressed, they're being an asshole. They're so annoying. And it's like, you're like, anything you say, you get a negative response. You're just like, are you kidding? Come on. But, like, again, you stick it out because it's your family. And, like, that's what, you know, he stuck it out with his mom, even though she was, I would say, being a little bit of an asshole.
I'm not going to stand behind a lot of the stuff that she ends up doing.
Yeah, not great parenting, if I'm honest.
It's really not. Okay. Well, I'm glad you love the movie as much as I did. It's one that I'm trying to recommend to as many parents as I can, and I get a lot of dirty looks because it's a movie about stressful parenting that may drive you to murder. You know, if you're a parent, you're pretty busy and you probably don't have time for that and you'd rather be watching something silly and entertaining. But yeah, I think it's a really great movie and I'm glad we're able to talk about it.
Yeah, sorry that I talked for a really long time.
No, that's how these things always go. I think at the beginning I was like 10-15 minute conversation. I have not done that yet with anybody. So as long as people are willing to listen to two people on a cell phone, I think we'll be okay.
So. By people, you mean the people who are on this podcast, right? I don't know if anybody else is listening.
I know, at least one or two people that haven't been on it yet that listen that will probably end up being on it. So you're
right.
I feel
good about that then.
Yep.
That's good. And listen, if all else fails, just keep asking different people to be on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Get those numbers up, listen. Benny boy. Get them up.
That's right. All right, Francesca.
I think we're ready for sponsorship.
That's something that Matt and I talked about. Well, he brought it up way before I even like published the first episode, and I was like, "What? I don't think that's how this works. I don't think you get sponsorship up front."
I think so.
All right. Well, apparently
the kids will be all over this one.
That's right. It's the breakout movie of the year for sure.
Uh-huh.
All righty. Well, thanks, Francesca.
Thank you, Ben.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.
Wait, do I say hello first or do you say hello first?
I will say hello, and then you, as in life, you say hello back to me.
No, if you're calling me, I say hello first.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
You've already put more thought into it than I have.